We left off on Dr. Chesem and Aleph last week, and we had actually started talking about a favorite topic of Lamdas, of the child who becomes a gadol during the days of Avelus, and someone who becomes an onain on Shabbos, doesn't daven Maariv that night because they can't, and comes the next day, they bury the mace in the morning, are they allowed to daven? Mm-hmm. Are they supposed to do a makeup Shemoneh Esrei? And the question of Havdalah as well. So I laid out the sort of theoretical considerations, and we mentioned, I think the lesson that we mentioned was that there is a machlokas in the Gemara when it comes to bringing karbanos of the regel, your own karbanos, your olas re'ia and your shalmei chagiga. Let's say a person was exempt on the first day of Yom Tov. Someone was lame, they were chiger, and then they were magically healed, and the next day they're now a nispashet. They're now well, and now they're chayiv in theory in Aliyah LeRegel and bringing karbanos. So there was a machlokas in the Gemara Chagiga whether all the days of the regel either are kulan tashlumin l'rishon or kulan tashlumin zelazet. Are they in effect all makeup days, the remaining six, for the first day of Yom? So I mean, if you didn't bring it the first day, then you're allowed to bring it the last days. It's like a makeup exam. Or no, are they fundamentally all on an equal footing? And the Gemara says that if they are kulan tashlumin derishon, if they're all the tashlumin of the first day, so then if you were exempt the first day, you're exempt the rest of Yom Tov. Whereas if kulan tashlumin zelazeh, then you would be obligated even though you only became obligated at some later point within the Chag. If I were to translate the Gemara's machlokas into lumdish terms, as in the base medrash they would say, what's the machayev of the karban chagiga, of the chagiga and the olas re'ia? Is mechayiv the first day, or is the mechayiv the entire Yom Tov? If the mechayiv is that which obligates you is the first day, if you're not obligated on the first day, you're exempt. If the mechayiv is simply the entire Yom Tov, then whenever you become obligated, you become obligated. So really, even though the Rishonim actually here don't formulate it this way, I'm about to share my screen with you. I want to just read the Rush on this. Even though they don't formulate it exactly in those terms or in that modern terms of Lamdas, it would seem that really that's what the issue all boils down to. In other words, and I think that the two are clearly, I think everybody probably could agree. I think everybody does agree that the mechayev of Tfilas Arvis is being obligated in to daven Maariv at some point during the time in which you normally daven Maariv, which means from the time Shabbos is over until dawn on Sunday morning. So that's the entire time in which you're allowed to daven Maariv, fundamentally lechatchila. Yes, there's a reason makim lemitzvos. Ideally, you do things as soon as you can. But in principle, the entire night is a time where you're obligated to daven Maariv. Once the day comes, I think everybody understands that that is called tashlumin. And that's the Gemara's terminology in the fourth paragraph. And you're basically doing a makeup. And so that case, I think, is clear. I think what the fight about Havdalah is, really is, firstly, how long can you make Havdalah? So the Gemara in the last Perek Imsachim has a number of opinions about this. I think there might be an opinion it's only the first night or the first, or maybe even Sunday day. And there are those who say the entire week, and there are those who say the entire week, but only until the week is over. And the week is over Tuesday, because we say that Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday are after Shabbos, and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday are before Shabbos. If you want to see sort of a halachic manifestation of this, the Gemara in Shabbos, I think on Daf Yud Tesem and Aleph quotes Tosefta, that you're not allowed to go on a boat ride 3 days before the Shabbos. Now, you can go on a boat ride, but you can't be mafligin b'sfina. You can't go on a journey that's expected to take you where you're going to be on the boat through Shabbos. You're not allowed to depart Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. So there's a big machlokas of Rishonim as to why. Many of you are probably familiar with the answer that the Rambam gives because of Oneg Shabbos. You'll be seasick the first few days. But both the Ramban and the Baal HaMor have this idea, and that's, they don't hold exactly the same way, but that because going on a boat was very dangerous, so if you step onto a boat on Wednesday or Thursday or Friday, what you're basically saying is, I'm going to need to be Mechallel Shabbos possibly to save my life. And I don't care. I'm putting myself in that situation l'chatchila. I think it's the Ramban's formulation, nireh kimasne l'chalal es ha-shabbos. It appears if you are stipulating, literally putting yourself in a situation where you have to desecrate the Shabbos because of pikuach nefesh. And obviously, when pikuach nefesh arises on Shabbos, One is absolutely obligated to desecrate the Shabbos, but one is not supposed to put oneself in a position in advance when they have a choice to be in a situation where they would need to be Mechal Shabbos or Pikuach Nefesh. And so the question is, then why is the prohibition only on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday? Why not on Tuesday? So the answer is because Tuesday belongs to the previous Shabbos. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, the Gimel Yamim are considered Mikame Shabbat. They begin, in effect, the new week. In fact, I don't know where I heard this or who says this, but in the Shir Shel Yom for Wednesday, so every other Shir Shel Yom, we say one full psalm of Tehillim. But on Wednesday, we say Mizmar Tzadi Dalin, and then we add on three psukim at the end of the Mizmar, which happened to be the first three psukim of Lechon Aranana, the Mizmar Tzadi Hei. So I forget who once told me that the reason for that, again, I'm not vouching for this, but the reason for that is because we're marking that Wednesday is really beginning Shabbos. So you start by, Kabbalah Shabbos is a fairly late custom, but nonetheless, you start Lechon Aranana on Wednesday because Wednesday already belongs to the Shabbos that's coming. So bottom line is that we hold that you can make Havdalah through Tuesday. So the question is, how do you look at the obligation and the ability to make Havdalah from Motzei Shabbos until Tuesday? So, in fact, you can actually technically make Havdalah. I don't know if you can do it on a coast after Plag HaMincha. You can certainly say Asachonein, in theory, and Davin Shemon Esrei Shechol after Plag HaMincha on Shabbos. But you have until the end of Tuesday to make Havdalah al HaKos. So do we look at this as if, basically, the period of making Havdalah al HaKos is from Motzei Shabbos until the end of Tuesday, or did we say no, that the obligation is Motzei Shabbos, that's l'chatchila. If you didn't do it Motzei Shabbos, you can make it up and do it the rest, the rest of the week until the end of the week, which is Tuesday. So I think that really is the question about the machlokes that we're about to encounter about if an onein could not make Havdalah and does not answer a main either to Havdalah on Motzei Shabbos, even if he hears it, or she hears it, whether or not they make Havdalah after the mace is buried, assuming the mace is buried before Tuesday, the end of Tuesday, really depends upon what is the mechayiv of Havdalah. Is it when Shabbos is out? Is it Motzei Shabbos? Or is it the entire period in which you can make Havdalah? So I'm going to now try to share my screen with you. Can people see the rush? Okay, great. So the Rosh commenting on our Gemara, Pasa mikriya shma mina tzila u mina tzila na mikol mitzvah samurus patora. Amru, shapam achas, haya Rabbeinu Yehuda zal onein, v'ochal v'lo havdala. So another one more piece of background for you. You're not allowed, ordinarily speaking, to eat before you make havdala al hakos. Now, there is, one very, very odd din. I don't remember why this is, but it's in the Gemara and it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. If you forget Atachon Antanu, you don't go back, right? You know, if you forget Atachon Antanu Motzei Shabbos, you don't have to go back and daven again. You just say, you mavdil al hakos, you make havdal al hakos. However, if you forgot to make havdal al hakos and you started to eat, now, forgetting, aside from the fact that you make havdal al hakos, you have to go back and say Shemon Esrei again and say Atachon Antanu. I don't quite understand why. I don't think I personally ever had that circumstance. Normally when I forget Atachon Antanu, which is it's something that is, it's more frequent than being struck by lightning, that's for sure. But I say Baruch Hamad Domei Kodesh L'chol after my Amida, which is what you should do. But, if you didn't say Baruch Hamad and you didn't say Atachon Antanu and you ate before Abdullah, now apparently you have to go back and daven Shemon Esrei again to say Atachon Antanu. But bottom line is you're not allowed to eat before you make Havdalah. What happens if you forgot and you ate? Forget my scenario. Forget whether you did or didn't say Atachon Antanu. There's a machlokas in the Gemara in the last parak in Sachem, whether ta'am mavdil or ta'am eno mavdil. Once you ate, have you somehow forfeited the ability to make Havdalah or not? So we happen to paskin ta'am mavdil. Even though you forgot and you ate, you're still allowed to make Havdalah. But you're going to see that machlokas, that issue, referenced here. So, Amru, on the second line, Shepam achas hayarvein yehud zal onein, v'achal below Havdalah. He ate without Havdalah. So Amar le, now remember, you're not allowed normally to eat before Havdalah, except for he couldn't make Havdalah. He wasn't chayiv in Havdalah. Amar le talmidav, v'navdil lefanecha, maybe we'll make Havdalah in your presence, and you can answer amen. Amar lahem, ha'amrinam biyushalmi, im birchu, In Berachu, ein ona achareim amen. If someone made a bracha, an onen made a bracha, I'm sorry, if an onen heard a bracha, he doesn't answer amen to the bracha. Right? He doesn't make brachos, so he doesn't answer amen. Amen makes you a participant in some way in the bracha. No amens for the onen, no brachas for the onen. Ulamachraso, kishabami besakvaros. The next day, when they came back from the cemetery, amrulo, they said to him, lama ein cha osa havdala. Why don't you make havdala now? And apparently he wasn't. Ha'amrinan ta'am mavdil. The Gemara, the maskana is, even though you ate before havdala, you still can make havdala afterwards. So yes, you ate a meal last night, but you're still not to make havdala now. Veheshiv lohem, he said to them, me'achar shayisi pater emesh b'shas chiyuv havdala mishum shayisi onen gam ata paterani. Since I was exempt at the time of the obligation of havdala, because I was an onen, so I'm also exempt now. Shekein matzinu b'perakama d'chagiga chiger b'yom rishon v'nispashet b'yom sheni. This is, again, assuming that we paskin, and it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter how we paskin there. He's only invoking the opinion that a chiger biyom rishon, someone who was lame on the first day and therefore is exempt because shalosh regalim, and minispashet biyom sheni, he is healed on the second day. Once he wasn't chayev on yom rishon, he's not chayev at all. Again, if that, you know, everybody agrees in principle. If the first day of Yom Tov is the Mechayev of Chagiga, then a Chiger B'Yom Rishon will always be Pater. So Rabbi Nehuda said the same thing applies here, that the real Chiev of Havdalah is Motzei Shabbos, and if you're not Chayev then, you're not going to be Chayev that week. V'ha Rabbi Meir Zal, here it's written the Nuremberg. I assume Rotenberg and Nuremberg are two different cities, but I didn't look and check my German geography. When the Torah quotes this din, he quotes Rabbeinu Meir Zal of Rotenberg. So I don't know what the story is here. Kosav v'halach b'hilchos machos shalom. In his Hilchos Avelos that he wrote, Rabbeinu, the Marami Rotenberg wrote, Mi sheyesh lo meis b'shabes v'lo nikbar ad lemachar. Someone who died on Shabbos. Now, one crucial point should be made here. If someone's relative died on Motzei Shabbos before he or she had the chance to make or hear Havdalah, there's not going to be any machlokas. Because when Shabbos was over and when you were obligated Havdalah by all counts, you were obligated because none of your relatives had died. Now that the relative dies before you had the chance to make Havdalah, and now you can't make Havdalah because you're an Onain, you were Chayev B'Shas Chiyuv Havdalah according to everybody, and therefore you'll be Chayev later. So that's why the Maram is writing very carefully, Mishi Yesh Lo Meis B'Shabbos. The person had to have died already by Shabbos, so that as soon as Shabbos is over, you're an Onain. V'lo Nikbar Ad L'machar, he's not buried till the next day. V'lo Hivdil B'Motzei Shabbos, obviously. So Nira Li, the first thing he says is Shemutar Lechol B'lo Havdalah. The first thing Marumberg says is, even though you're not going to make Havdalah at best until tomorrow, you're allowed to eat Motzei Shabbos without Havdalah, and only it's allowed to eat. Even though normally it's Aser Litom Achiyadil, he's Pater from Havdalah. The Amrinan, the Perek Misha Meso Muta Lefana Pater Mikol Mitzvos Shebetorah. You're exempt from all mitzvos. The Amrinan La B'Yushalmi Kala Pater Menadav Aroseu Nikra Hedyo. The Yushalmi says anybody who's exempt from a mitzvah and they do it anyway, they're called a Hedyo. So what he assumes is that the issur of eating before you make Havdalah, a Motzei Shabbos, is only because you're obligated to make Havdalah. If you're not obligated to make Havdalah, there's no prohibition of eating. So that's why he said, obviously, the Onin doesn't make Havdalah, and he's allowed to eat. But, uv'yom ha-machras la'achar shenikvar meso, on Sunday after the Levaya, osur lechol ad sheyavdil, you're not allowed to eat until you make Havdalah. The ha kaimalon, the arve psachim, ta'am mavdil. We paskin that even if you ate, you still make Havdalah. So even though the onen ate Motzei Shabbos, once the time that he comes that he can make Havdalah, he has to make Havdalah. We don't say, oh, sorry, you ate, and therefore you pass it from Havdalah. Therefore you don't make Havdalah. V'amrina nami, mi shelo hivdil b'motzei Shabbos, mavdil v'hole kol Shabbos kula. If you didn't make Havdalah Motzei Shabbos, you can be Mavdil the entire week, whatever the entire week means, as we discussed before. Now, then he points out, v'hoda amrinam b'perek mishameso, no se hamita v'chilu fehem, ad v'chulei, ad eile v'eile p'tur menatfila. U'perish Rashi, v'ze l'shono, p'tur menatfila d'lav d'oraisa. So this, what the Marami Rutenberg is referring to here, is a line in the Mishnah that says that even though only those people who are in front of the bed, lefnei hamita, are potter from Kriya Shema, but those who are achrei hamita are exempt from Kriya Shema, they're all exempt from the mitzvah of tefillah. They're all exempt. Now, Rashi says, upeirish Rashi, again, v'zeh l'shono, p'tur menat tefillah, de'lav d'oraisahi. So Rashi said it's because they weren't mechayiv the person because tefillah is not menat Torah. So Kriya Shema, if you're no longer needed to carry the mace, even though you're at the levaya, you're chayivin. But tefillah, you're not chayivin. It's not the raisa. But Rabosenu Pirshu, Lefisha Yeshlam Od Shaos. Some of his rabbeim explained differently. The reason why they're exempt from tefillah is because they still will have time to daven. So he disagrees with this. You'll see in a second why he's quoting all this. V'li nirish ein zeh. He thinks that Rashi is correct. In other words, if someone is allowed to do the mitzvah of burying the mace or be involved in the levaya only because they will still have time to daven afterwards, we don't say that you're potter from davening. Potter from davening would mean that you don't have to daven right now, and even though this man tefillah might pass because you're busy at the funeral. So he thinks that Rashi is correct. But now he said that basically, those who are standing la'achre hamita are exempt from tefillah. They're potter. Ve'en la'hakshos al dvarai mipeirish Rashi, demashma kevan shepetur nahi shaita petur no lamis. So you might have looked at Rashi and said, you know what? Those who are exempt from tefillah, who are achre hamita, are always exempt. Right? Not like his rabbein, who say that they're only exempt when they'll have enough time later, which means they're not really exempt. No, Rashi says that Turim, the Chachamim exempted them because it's only then the Rabbanon. So you might have said, you might have mistakenly assumed it means they're potter no matter what, even if they bury the mace, and now there's time. So he says, the Havadai Leis, that's wrong, the Mino Moda Rashi, them cover us a mace, the Yesh Shahos Bayom Shayuchlo Lishalos from the Shalolim. Rashi would agree that once you bury the mace, if there's still time, you have to daven. Ad Kan Lo Pligi Rabosa Bahu, he and his rabbeim only argue el lefi shelefi rabosav im igiyas manat tefila v'yochol lasuk va'adayin yishlohem shalos lispalo yaskubo. According to Rashi's rabbeim, you're only exempt if there'll be enough time to daven afterwards. But v'im lav lo yivat l'mitfila, they should daven first. U'lepei rush Rashi afilo miyavar zmanat tefila yaskubo. According to Rashi, if zman tefila passes, you still deal with the mace. That's what he differs. But nonetheless, everybody agrees that even though, that just because you're potter at the first moment that you could daven, as long as you become chayiv during Zman Tefillah, everybody agrees you're chayiv. So the same thing would be true by Havdalah. The im kein, the nidon zeh, kevan bizman Havdalah, kol yom ha-machras, or the chol ha-shabbos kulo, af o pi shaloi haya yochol ha-havdil kodem shenikvar meso, So the Marami Rutenberg says that the entire period in which you can say Havdalah, we might, to borrow the Gemara's expression, Chagiga, it's kulon tashlumin telezeh. It's all one time that you're equally chayiv. Just because you're not chayiv, the first moment that you normally could do the mitzvah doesn't mean therefore you're forever puzzled. Again, he doesn't stress what is really the key point. The key point is that what Rabbeinu Yehuda presumably meant, and the Rush I think is going to say this later, the Rush is going to reject his Rebbe's opinion, he rejects the Marami Rutenberg who was his Rebbe, is that Rabbeinu Yehuda believed that the primary chi of a Havdalah was only Motzei Shabbos. Rabbeinu Yehuda would agree that if the mace died on Shabbos, and comes Motzei Shabbos, and you're potter from Havdalah, but it's Yerushalayim, and they bury the mace at night, and now it's 2:30 in the morning, but it's really halachically night, of course, Rabbeinu Yehuda would agree that you have to make Havdalah. Because the Iker Zman Havdalah is the first night. Everything else for Rabbeinu Yehuda, starting Sunday morning, starting Sunday at dawn, is Tashlumin. L'Rishon, it's Tashlumin to Motzei Shabbos. So the key point is that Rami Rutenberg is assuming that the obligation, the Mechayev of Tefillah, is the entire period. It's all equal. It's like all 7 days of Chag, according to the Man to Amar, Kulon Tashlumin Zeh L'Zeh. And then he says, again, in came and he don't say, came and does not have dollar, call your mama first, the whole Shabbos kula, afa pishla, he afa lahavdil, call them shenikvar meso, yavdil la'acha shenikvar meso, could the priest. Ain lomar, now he says, you shouldn't say, came and shenikvar meso, lahavdil, lo yocha. Now let's go back to the other way. He just raises a different question. Why don't you say that it is, that since you don't make Abdullah, you're not allowed to eat Motzei Shabbos? He says, you can't say that. The Had Amrinan, the Inam Avarach, the Inam Azameh. The halacha is that an onain can't make brachos and he doesn't participate in benching. And afilu hachi ocha, we don't say that since you can't make brachos, we making a birchas hanenin, making a bracha before you eat a food. So we tend to think of it as a kind of a mitzvah saseh. It's a mitzvah to do to thank God for the food. But the Gemara on the opening daf of the sixth parak of Aaron Masechta is going to say that someone who eats without a bracha, it's like he violates me'ilah. He's stealing from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Because it's not just that there's a mitzvah to make a bracha. There's an iser to eat if you haven't made a bracha. So the Rush says, even though there's an iser to eat without making a bracha, and we say that an onei enem varach enem azamin afilu hachi ocha, it's assumed, of course, I don't know how you know this, but I guess it does state it in the Gemara, right? He turns around and he eats, even though he can't make a bracha. In other words, the iser of eating without making a bracha is only usher when you're able to make a bracha, when you're obligated to make a bracha. If you're not obligated, you're not able to do so, the halacha doesn't permit you to do so, then there's no prohibition of eating. And there he says, afilu mishama mayachirim shevdila b'motzei Shabbos ina olalo. Even if you hear from others who make Abdullah, you're not yotze. Kevan debahi shaita la baruchi uvahu. We learned something analogous to this when we explored at the beginning of the second paragraph the topic of davar sheina miskavim. So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, I think on Daf Chaf Zayin or Chaf Ches Amar Aleph, says that itim cholim itim shota. If a person is sometimes of sound mind, sometimes they're cholim, they're well, and sometimes they're shota, sometimes they're out of their mind, meaning they're in the halachic category of not being a bardah. So if the person performs a mitzvah, let's say they eat matzah when they're cholim, they fulfill the obligation. If they eat matzah when they're in the stage of being a shota, they're not yotze the mitzvah, because at that time, they're not obligated in the mitzvah. If you're not obligated in the mitzvah, you can't fulfill your obligation by an action that you do then. So the Rush, quoting the Maharal in Wittenberg, says, even if you heard other people make Havdalah Motzei Shabbos, the answer remains, you're not yotze, because you're not chayiv at that particular moment. And therefore, v'tzarech lemachar lachzar levarech Ulahavdil. The next day, you have to turn around and you have to make Havdalah again. Miui says, Eino mevarech ala besamim v'alamor. You don't make a bracha on the besamim or on the ma'or. I presume that you're not allowed to make a bracha on the ma'or. And generally, that's our practice. We don't, whenever you make Havdalah on Sunday, you don't say bar mera'esh, because the zman, ikar zman bria sa'or, is Motzei Shabbos. So that's when the takana was to make a bracha on the ma'or. And besamim, I presume that there's no iser in making, you want to make a bracha on besamim, you can go right now in the middle of shir, you can go to your spice cabinet and take out the cinnamon, make a bracha, barim and besamim, and smell it if you like. There's no iser making it, but there's no inyan of having besamim with the havdalah, presumably because the opportunity of comforting yourself over the neshama yisera that has left has already passed. Sunday morning has come, it's done, it's over. Okay. And then he just says, "Shamati sheyesh gedolim she'omen la'acher la'havdil." There are those gedolim who suggested that the avel should hear someone else's havdalah and be exempt. Ve'ein nirali klal ela kedeprishus. I don't believe that that's correct. And then he just says, "V'shuv higidli." I don't know who this is. It's not the Baal Hamor, who is Rav Zrachya Levi, but I don't think that this is. Higidli Haraz Halevi Zal Mispire, Vishem Havravyekusio Mispire, Shemato Gadol Echat Shekosa Kidvarai Veshimolo Higidli. So apparently, Maran said, someone told me that someone else said like me, but he didn't tell me who it was. Ad Kan Lishon Rabbeinu Meir Zal. This is everything he's quoted until now was the Maran Mi-Rutenberg. So now the Rush pipes in, even though he just quoted his Rebbe. He says, Venera Lee, Kedivrei Rabbeinu Yehuda. The Rush says, I think Rabbeinu Yehuda is correct. The Hadamrin Arve Pesachim, Misha lo hivdil b'motzei Shabbos navdil v'cholek kol haShabbos kula. That which we say that if you make havdala motzei Shabbos, you can make havdala the whole week or whatever the whole week means. Hainu kishelo hayelo yayin b'motzei Shabbos. If you didn't have wine in motzei Shabbos, o she'iro ones, or some other ones happened that you just weren't able to. Acha shelo hayachal havdil. You weren't able to make havdala, so you in effect can do tashlumin. Aval onein the bishah shechal alav chiyav havdala hayapator niftar legamei. The onein who was exempt fundamentally. Not that he wasn't able to do it because he was honest, right? He was too busy. He didn't have a coast. He didn't have wine, whatever it was. He's chayiv. He's just not able to do it. But an onein wasn't chayiv in Abdullah. Niftar legamrei v'tu lo mechayiv. V'damya legamrei lahi dechi gerbe yomisha misashki avcheni. It is exactly analogous, says the Rush, to the person who was lame on the first day of Yom Tov, became unlame on the second day of Yom Tov, according to the opinion that Kulon Tashlum in the Rishon. What he doesn't, in effect, acknowledge here, but really the Nekudas HaMachlokas, as I suggested before, is whether or not the primary Mechai of Havdalah is in fact Motzei Shabbos, or no. Basically, there's an obligation to make Havdalah all of Shabbos, let's say Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, starting Motzei Shabbos. If you didn't make Havdalah in the earlier part, there's an equal obligation to make it later, and the only difference is you don't say Borim or Eish or the Bracha on the Besamim with Havdalah done later than Motzei Shabbos, just because it's not relevant at that point. And you're not allowed to eat until you make Havdalah. So in theory, I mean, putting aside the fact that you lose the Bracha of Neiros and Besamim and Zrizim Akdim Lemitzos, it would seem, according to the Maharam Rutenberg, if you're perfectly happy to fast Motzei Shabbos into Sunday, really, Mitzad Havdalah, there's no loss. There's no giron, the fact that you made Havdalah the next day, other than you weren't Mekayim's reason. Again, yes, you lost Ma'on, you lost Besamim. So, of course, you're supposed to make Havdalah Motzei Shabbos. But fundamentally, from the vantage point of the Chiyuv of Havdalah, the Maharam in Wittenberg would say it's not different when it's done Sunday day than when it's done Motzei Shabbos, where it's done Monday or Monday night or Tuesday, etc. Whereas the Rush and Rabbeinu Yehuda believe now that the fundamental obligation of Havdalah is the first night, the first time period, Motzei Shabbos. But if you didn't make it then, assuming that you were high then you're chayiv and you can make it up at some point later in the week. Okay. So that is this issue. I'm not going to discuss the question of a katan who becomes a bar mitzvah in the middle or bat mitzvah in the middle of Shiva. If I'm not mistaken, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that the katan is chayiv in avelus. This too was a machlokas. It might be again a machlokas, the Rush and the Maharam Rutenberg. So if I'm correct in remembering that, so the Mechaber, I think paskins, very, very towards the end of Tuchas Avelus, like in that case, I think like the Maharam Rutenberg, that a katan shin is gadel in the middle of avelus is actually chayiv in avelus. Even though that seems to contradict the Mechaber's position about, no, I got it backwards. I'm sorry. I think the Mechaber paskins like the Maharam Rutenberg here that you say Havdalah, but there he paskins that the Katan is not Chayiv and Avelus. So the Shach right there, it's easy to make a chiluk between the two. So I'll let everybody make their own chiluk. But for now, let's come back to our Gemara. And we were on the Gemara on Daf Yud Ches Samad Aleph, two lines.
Rabbi, a quick question.
Yes.
So if the time of your obligation is past and you had no chiv to do it during that time, there's no such thing as tashlumim. Is that accurate?
Correct.
Okay. I got it. Okay, thank you.
So the practical case where this comes more, it comes up for Havdalah. The clear cut case, as I mentioned earlier, is Maariv,
yes,
on Motzei Shabbos. In other words, in a case where a mace dies on or before Shabbos, the onein, at least ordinarily speaking, is potter from Maariv, Tfilas Arvis, as soon as Shabbos is over. If they don't bury the mace at night, then you don't do Tashlum in the next day. That's what the Shulchan Aruch paskins, I think, early on in Shulchan Aruch, Hilchos Aninos, Mm-hmm. There is a very interesting, because that is very clear. The primary chiyuv of Ma'ariv is the night, and the morning is just Tashlumin. I believe Chacham Avadya has a suggestion, a possibility, that if the person wanted to daven Ma'ariv on Shabbos after Plaga Minchas, since Me'ikar Hadin, you know, we're going to get to a Gemara in the fourth parak that says that Rav Tzali shall Shabbos be Erev Shabbos, and Shomotze Shabbos be Shabbos. Rav made early Shabbos, and he davened Ma'ariv, let's just say, after Plag on Friday, even though it was bright day, and he would daven Ma'ariv of Chol, of Motze Shabbos, on Shabbos after Plag Amincha on Shabbos afternoon. In theory, you're allowed to do that. The Achronim don't like that idea because they're afraid people will then come to do Malacha. You know, if people daven Ma'ariv, you know, either after Plag or right after Shkia, before we would say it's safe, they're afraid people do Malacha. But in principle, from the vantage point of Hilchos Tefillah, any other day of the week, you're allowed to daven Ma'ariv after Plag. So I think Chacham Avadya has a suggestion that you could, if you wanted, you could daven Ma'ariv on Shabbos after Plag HaMincha, because you're still not doing any, you're still not an Onain, because of Shabbos. You would do all other mitzvos. So if you could daven Mincha, 60 seconds before Plag, you could daven Ma'ariv 60 seconds after Plag HaMincha. But one is not obligated to do so. Ikar Zman, it comes at night. And since the person it was not obligated then, if they didn't daven Ma'ariv at night, if they didn't bury the mace at night, they would be exempt. They would not daven a Tfilas Tashlumin on Sunday morning.
I have a three-volume set of on the different sayings or drushas of Chassidish Rebbe's on Hilchas Avelos, and I believe they bring it now from the previous Imre Chaim. I think, you know, that was like a previous vision of Rebbe or something, that he said even before burial a chassid can put on tefillin, and he said a chassid could do an avera once in a while. That was his that was the explanation. In 7 years, a chassid can see an avera, but whatever.
Okay.
Just a comment.
Okay. So our practice, incidentally, is not to put on film, not only not before, but even the first day of Avelus after the Kfura. All of the mitzvahs that Avelus Chayavin after the Kfura, with the exception of Tzilin, the day of the Kfura. Okay, so we're now up to the Gemara, two lines before they get wide on Yud Chesem and Aleph, and the Gemara says the following. Gufa, quoting a line from a previous part of the sugya, and now analyzing it. Hamishamer sameis afal pisha eno meso potu mikriyashma uminatfila umiko mitzvah samur spetora. If someone is engaged in guarding the mace, then you potu from all kriyashma tfilin tfila all mitzvahs ase. Hayushnaim, if there were two people guarding the mace, ze mishamer vizekore, ze mishamer vizekore. So if there are two people, so you take turns doing your mitzvah and guarding the mace, because you don't need two people to guard the mace. So if there were two people there, rotate. Hayubayim benazayomet, hayubayim besfina, if they were traveling with the mace in a boat, Manicho bezavize umispalul and shneim bezavis acheres. They can stop. They don't really need to be watching the mace while they're in transit on the boat. So apparently the Gemara assumes that the Tanakhama disagrees with Ben Azai. You know, the Tanakhama didn't explicitly disagree. You could have said the Tanakhama was talking about when you were on dry land, and Ben Azai was talking about when you were on a boat. But the Gemara assumes that the Tanakhama always requires someone to be watching the mace, even on a boat. So the Gemara explains, what do they argue about? My Benayu. Amar Ravina, Hoshishin la'achvarim ika Benayu. The Rai Rashi explains, are we afraid, why are we Mishamer Sameis? We're Mishamer Sameis because we're afraid rodents will get to the body and start to gnaw at the body. So the question is, are we concerned about rodents on a boat? So the Tanakhama, Mar Savar Cheshin, the Tanakhama is concerned even on a boat. So even on a boat, you always have to have one of them watching them. Umar Sabalochishin, and the other one says on dry land there are lots of rodents, not so many rodents on boats. I mean, there are enough rodents that have traveled on boats for rodents to travel from Europe to the Americas. But lots of other things like that. But nonetheless, Ben Azai wasn't concerned. He didn't think that there was such a rat infestation on the boats that you had to worry about them about them, getting to the mace. Okay. Now the Gemara continues. Tanu Rabbanan on the fourth wide line on Yudches Siman Aleph. Hamolech Atzamos Mimakom Lamakom Hareza Lo Yitnem Bidusakya. If you are here, you've engaged in what we call Likur Atzamos. Right today, for the most part, I don't know if the Likur Atzamos is done at all anymore under ordinary circumstances, unless you're forced to move a body, because the cemetery is going to be desecrated somehow. But what they used to do was they would bury a mace in these crypts, typically, not in dirt. They would bury them the way the Mishnayos and Bava Basra and the Gemara Bava Basra describes. You would dig into really rock. You would carve out of rock, I guess, maybe it didn't have to be rock, but often it was, these crypts. You would put the mace inside the crypt. You would leave the mace there for a certain amount of time, maybe a year. You would wait until all the flesh had decomposed. You were left just with bones. And then you did what was called Likur Atzamos. They would gather the bones. They probably put them in ossuaries, in these smaller containers. It's the last siman actually in Yoredeya, I believe, talks about Likur Atzamos. The day that you're Malaket Atzamos for your Karov is a day that you have partial Avelus on. And even though Avelus was your however many months or a year past the Avelus, or more than a year, but Yom Likur Atzamos, maybe just on Av Imo perhaps, I don't remember. It's in the last siman, it's siman Kaf Gimel, I think, in Yoredeya. So Yom Likur Atzamos is like a day of a call mini day or a day of mini avelus. So in this case, this person, they were malakei fi atzamos, and they're transporting them somewhere. So you're not allowed to put them in a disakya, I believe, is some kind of a, it might be dual stack, like a, it was something you put over an animal and it had, a pack on each side. I believe it's dusakya, might be the etymology, but I'm not 100% sure. And whatever, you put them in this container. The yitneim agabe chamer, you put it on the donkey. The yirtavalein, and you ride on top of it. So you're basically sitting on top of the bones. Mipnei shenoi b'hem minat b'zayon. It's disrespectful to the dead. But imhaya misyare mipnei nachum, they list him. If you're afraid of bandits or non-Jews, would be non-Jewish bandits also. List them were Jews. I know that it was Herzl's dream, apparently, that we should come to the state and we should have, the Jewish prostitute and the Jewish thief. And unfortunately, l'davoneinu harav, Jewish extremists. So the truth is, it wasn't new to Medina. It wasn't new to the modern era. They had it in the classical era as well. Read Josephus. They had crazy, crazy murderous zealots who would kill their own. They had the thieves. They had everything. So Nachrim are non-Jewish bandits, and you can assume the list of them are Jewish bandits. If you're afraid somehow they're going to take the bones, they're going to treat them with disrespect, then it's mutter to put them in a way that somehow is going to protect the bones. Just as we say by atzamos, the same thing applies to a Sefer Torah. The way Tosus understands it means that you're not allowed to be sitting on top of the Sefer Torah when you're transporting it. But if you need to protect the Sefer Torah, then you're allowed to do so. The Rif, not clear what the Rif's opinion is. It's something that the Rif said that no, you're never allowed to sit on top of the Sefer Torah. If it's a choice of having to sit, it's one thing to put it on the back of the donkey. But if the choice is to sit on top of the Sefer Torah or risk something happening to it, so some understand the Rif is saying, better that someone else desecrate the Sefer Torah than you sit on top of the Sefer Torah. That's enough of a bizayon to the Sefer Torah that you shouldn't be doing. Okay. So then the Gemara says, commenting, Ahia, Ilema Aresha, when we say Chederach Sha'amru Batzamos Kach Amru B'Sefer Torah, so what is that a comment about? If you're talking about on the Resha that you're not allowed ordinarily to sit on top of it, put it in a Dusaki and sit on top of it, Pshita Migara Sefer Torah Me'asamos? Is the Sefer Torah, unless needs to be treated with less kavod than the bones of a person? No, it's going on the second part, that even a Sefer Torah, if you need to protect it, whatever level, whatever, according to Tosis, according to Drift, whatever you're allowed to do, then you're allowed to do that. It's kind of interesting that the Gemara's assumption is that, of course, a Sefer Torah is entitled to more dignity than the Atzamos of a mace. In the truth is, it does make sense, the assumption in light of another comment that the Gemara has. The halacha is that even though we don't actually do this today, for whatever the reasons, when a person is in the presence of a person who dies, when you're there, b'shas yitzias neshama, even though you're not a karov, you're obligated to pair kriya. You're obligated to pair kriya. Why? Because it's like a sefer Torah shenisraf. When a person dies, when the neshama leaves, it's like a sefer Torah that's been burned. So, and the assumption is that a person, in many ways, is compared to a sefer Torah. Rashi, we don't have, but quoted by the Ramban in Torah Adam, says because he studies Torah, which Ramban says then it wouldn't apply to women. So the Ramban says no, it means because you fulfill the mitzvahs of the Torah. It applies to everybody. So in this, so a living human being is like a sefer Torah, and a living human being takes precedence over a sefer Torah. There's a choice between saving a human being and saving the sefer Torah. You save the human being. But once the neshama has departed, so then obviously there's a tremendous obligation of kavanah meis. But then it may be that the body alone doesn't take precedence over the sefer Torah. The
kedusha. Rabbi Weider, does that apply to doctors also who might be there at the time of someone's passing?
In theory, yes. We don't observe this din anymore. It's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. We don't do it. There are a number of dinim, and it's not just that. Number one, 1 second, Rabbi Lichtenstein. If you're there, b'shas yitzias neshama, even if unless the person is a Rasha Gamor, even though they're not an Adam Kasher, you have to tear kriya. If you hear about a shmua of an Adam Kasher, I think, or maybe you have to be there in the presence, an Adam Kasher who died before the Kura, you're also supposed to tear kriya. Like there's a series of steps. The Gemara is in Shabbos, I think it's Daf Kufay, Kufay Amid Beis, where the Gemara goes to the sequence. It's also in Moed Tatan. We don't do any of those kriyas, generally speaking. Bizman has there, we essentially only do kriyas on our Krovim, maybe on the Gadol Hador or something like that. But for the most part, we don't do the kriyas. There's a question as to why not. The svara that's usually given, I think it's the Rama who quotes the din that we don't do the kriya, is that if you obligated people to tear kriya who are there, b'shas yitzias neshama, they won't want to be there because they won't have to constantly be destroying their garments. And the mace is mochel on his kavod because he or she doesn't want to be alone when they're dying. So in effect, because that kind of a kriya is really only because of kavod amace, the mace was mochel on their kavod. Rabbi Lichtenstein.
Yeah, I believe it's many years ago, but I believe I heard Rav Schechter say in connection with Ranan's question that religious doctors try not to be actually by the bedside b'shas yitzias nishmaso. In other words, if they feel that the mace is dying and that it's momentarily, they would step out of the room for just that moment. Not that they abandon the mace.
Okay.
I'm quite sure, because I have this vivid picture in my eye of Dr. Fink. Dr. Fink was a very religious doctor in our congregation who was the first from KJ to make Aliyah after the Six-Day War. And I had a picture of him trying to avoid that thing. But I certainly agree with you that people don't, they're not Korea, b'shas yitzias nishmoso.
Okay. Fine. So now the Gemara now continues. Amar Rechava, Amar Rav Yehuda, kol haroa hameis ve'eno melaveihu, over mishum loeg larash cheref oseihu. Someone who sees a body being carried by, let's say they're sitting in their store, and the procession goes by, and they don't join the procession for at least a small amount, the balanamos, it's considered loeg larash, mocking the poor. And loeg larash, one who mocks the poor, is cheref oseihu, has blasphemed his creator, the poor person's creator. The im hilvahu, but if he accompanies him, maschara, what is his reward? Amar Rav Asi, Alav Akos of Omer, Malveh Hashem, Chonein Dal, Umechabdo, Chonein Evyon. He quotes actually two psukim here. One who shows kindness to a poor person, and the mace here is the Dal, as if he had given a loan to God. He had done a chesed for God, Givayachal. Umechabdo, Chonein Evyon, one who shows kindness towards a poor person is as if he had honored God. These are actually two different psukim here. And so that's what it says. The person who gives to those who are in need, who is not going to get anything back, it's as if you've given to God. I wanted to just have one suggestion here, which is, and I didn't check the manuscript, so I apologize for that, but I am wondering whether or not there's an error in our text in the previous line. Someone who doesn't accompany a dead person, why is he considered loeg larush? How is he mocking the dead? It's one thing if I do a mitzvah, and it's like, ha, 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 you can't do mitzvahs. I'm doing mitzvahs. But because I don't accompany the person, why is that loeg larush? So there is actually another pasuk, which is the first half of one of the two pasukim of the good part, umechabdo chonein evyon. That first pasuk is, oshek dal cheref osehu. One who oppresses the poor has blasphemed his creator. Not loeg larush cheref osehu, but oshek dal cheref osehu. And then umechabdo, but chonein evyon, someone who shows kindness to the poor, has honored God, as opposed to blasphemy. So I wonder whether or not, in fact, Oshek Dal Cheref Osehu is actually the pasuk that's intended. You're not mocking the poor person, but you're engaged in Oshek. So the question is, what is Oshek? Why is this Oshek Dal? So when one looks in the Rambam, in Hilchos Gezela Vaveda, so the Rambam explains the difference between a gazlan and an Oshek, is that both of them hold something of somebody else, which illegally. But the difference is that a gazlan steals it. An Oshek simply refuses to give what they owe. If you borrow money from somebody and then you refuse to pay it back when they ask for it, when you're obligated to, that's Oshek. If you find somebody's lost aveda, you take it into your house. You didn't steal it. That's the appropriate thing to do. When you refuse to return it, you violate Oshek. If you owe a worker wages and you refuse to do it, so that's a violation. If you pay him, that's a violation of Oshek. So I think that the same thing actually may be reflected in this pasuk, if I'm correct, which is when another person passes by, so there's an obligation, you owe that person to accompany them, because the underlying principle of Gemilas Chasadim, Havas Hames, Nichom Avelim, is what the Torah describes, or the Gemara describes, as the Galgal Achoz of Olam. It's the social contract. I do for you because you do for me. The Gemara, the Mishnah in Ksuba says that if a husband is madir his wife, he doesn't like her going places. So he imposes basically a vow. However he does that, so she can't go to a Beis Avel, can't go to a Beis Mishnah. So he's obligated to divorce and pair Ksuba because he's basically no Aldelis b'fanel. Why? Because she says those people who comfort others, so they'll be comforted. Those people who accompany and bury others, they'll be buried. Now, the Safod Yispadune, those who eulogize will be eulogized. It's part of a social contract. So when someone passes by, a funeral procession passes by, and I fail to show Kavod Ames and to do give Kavod Achron, so I'm Oshek because there's an obligation. I owe something. It's part of a mutually agreed upon arrangement. Okay. So now the Gemara has one more story, which is directly related to what we just encountered, which is Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yonasan. So Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yonasan were walking in the cemetery. I don't know why they were walking there, because it doesn't look like they were, it seems like they were just, I don't know, they wanted to impress upon themselves that Sof Kol Hadam. So they're walking through, and Hava Kashadya Tchelta de Rabbi Yonasan. Rabbi Yonasan's Tcheles was dragging on the ground. So firstly, one of the things that you see from this Gemara, not that I encourage this, but sometimes, tefillin, we say it's inappropriate. Tefillin's not supposed to be put on the ground. Sefer Torah is not supposed to be put on the ground. There's no issue of tzitzis, right? So pick your tzitzis up, they're on the ground. There's no chiyuv to remove tzitzis off the ground. I mean, you shouldn't, tafka, you shouldn't be mevazin, but the fact is tzitzis were on the bottom of garments, and sometimes if your garment was long or your tzitzis was long, the tzitzis were on the ground, and that wasn't the problem, except here it was a problem. Amar le Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chiya said to Rabbi Yonasan, "Dalye, pick your tzitzis up, kidei shelo yomru lemachar boyin etzlonu, the Achshav Mecharfen Osam. They shouldn't say, the Mesim are going to say, you know, tomorrow they'll be where we are. And now they're making fun of us. Not a good idea. Now, so pick them up. Now, interestingly enough, the Rishonim here talk about this issue, and Tosa says this, and I think Rabbeinu Yonah says this. It might be that, so you see, you are allowed to wear tzitzis in the Beis HaKaras, but they should be dragging on the ground. That's like rubbing salt in the wound. But they say that may only been true in the time of the Gemara, where they used to normally wear an outer beged that was chayav in tzitzis. They didn't wear a beged like most of us do, a talis katan, which we would never wear otherwise. They didn't wear a beged like that just to be chayav in tzitzis. They wore garments that naturally had four corners, and therefore you had to put tzitzis on it. So you don't have to strip off your garments when you go to the Beis HaKaras. But for us, so we who normally would not wear the garment except for the purpose of doing the mitzvah, that might be inappropriate. I think we would say all it means is that you shouldn't wear your tzitzis out when you go to the Beis HaKaras, even if you normally leave your tzitzis out. When you go to the Beis HaKaras, your tzitzis should be tucked in. Okay. So Omar Lei, Rabbi Yonasan responds to Rabbi Chia, Umiyade Kulehai, do the Mason really know what's going on in this world? Now, we're about to engage in a somewhat lengthy discussion that I think more belongs to the realm of theology and Agada than anything else, about what those who have passed on from this world do and don't know. I think that this Gemara maybe even more belongs in the realm of psychology, which is, I don't think we actually know. The notion of the world of Neshamos and of Tchias HaMesim and Olam Haba are certainly central concepts in Jewish theology. They're very important concepts, but we are a little fuzzy on the details. So when we talk about what exactly will be, so I think sometimes we're talking about it more for ourselves. And when you talk about whether the Mason know what's going on, I imagine this would make a great Yizkor Drasha. In other words, the way we behave and the way we act in this world, so to paraphrase one of my favorite Gemaras, or to quote one of my favorite Gemaras, when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was on his deathbed, so his Talmidim said to him, give us a bracha. It's at the end, I think, of the fourth or fifth parak of his Masechta. And so he said to them, Yiratzon, that your fear of God should be equal to your fear of man. So, you know, these very, very erlucha from Yeshiva Bachram said, Rebbe, and that's it? And it shouldn't be greater? Our fear of God shouldn't be greater? So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai looks at them and says, listen, when a person is about to sin, we know what it is. I would say, Vayifen kovacho, vayarki enish. You look around to see if everybody else is looking. You don't say, does God see me? If only you could treat your fear of God like your fear of people, that would be a tremendous milah. In the same vein, when we behave the way we do, you know, so do we think about our ancestors who might be, do they know what's going on in our world? Do they see our deeds? Because if we knew that they did, we might choose to act differently. And so I think that really, in some ways, what this Gemara is about, again, is not about trying to know exactly what goes on in Olam Haba and what the Mason do and don't know. But I think it really is, it gives us food to think about how we lead our lives and what, if the Mason knew exactly what we were doing, would we choose to do some of those things? Okay. So now, Rabbi Yonasan says to Rechia, Umiyade kulei hai, do they really know what's going on? V'haksiv, v'hameisim einam yodim me'uma. Right, this is one pasuk from Kohelas. The Mason don't know anything. Ki achayim yodim sheyamusu, the living know that they're going to die eventually. But v'hameisim einam yodim me'uma. They don't know anything. Amar lei, Rabbi Chia said to Rabbi Yonasan, Im karisa lo shanisa, im shanisa lo shilashta. Im shilashta lo pirshulach. If you learn once, it means you didn't learn twice. You should have learned the Chtan Chazara, learned it again, because you didn't learn it well enough the first time. And if you learned it twice, it means you should have probably learned it a third time if you understood it. And if you read it a third time and you still didn't understand it, obviously you needed someone to teach you who didn't never actually explain to you what the pasuk means. And so Rabbi Chia says, Ki achayim yodim sheyamusu, Eilu tzadikim shebemisasam nikru hayim. The first half of the pasuk, that the living know they're going to die, even refers to those who have died already, the tzadikim, who even when they've died, they're still called chayim. They're still alive. And we might say because righteous people, when they leave an impact in the world, it's like they're still here in a good way. Shenemar, they quote a pasuk, Uvno Yahu ben Yoyada ben Ish Chai, I think that's the ksiv, the kray, I think is chayil. Rav pa'olim mikab tse'el. Hu hika eshnei Ariel Moav. So this, firstly, this verse is in at the end, towards the end of Sefer Shmuel Beis, in which it's listing, it's a list of King David's warriors. So Benoyo Ben Yoyada, who was probably his chief general at some point, was Shlomo's actually chief general. Ben Ishai, so he was the son of a warrior. Rav Pa'olim, which the Gemara would say of many deeds, Mikav Tse'el, from a particular place. And what did he do? Hu hika eshnei Ariel Moav. He killed the two lions of Moab. V'hu yarad v'hikas ha'ari b'soch habor b'yom ha'shalag. He killed the lion in the pit on the day of snow. So the Gemara is going to talk about what exactly this pasuk means, because just to tell us a little hero story, you know, tales of the warriors is not of interest. That's not why the Navi is telling us this. So the first question the Gemara says, what, Ben Ish Chai? Atu, on the top of Yuches HaMedeis, Kulei Alma B'nei Meisei Ninu? Oh, B'nei Ben Yada, he was the son of a living person, as opposed to the rest of us, what, sons of dead people? But everybody else is born from a dead person? Of course, everybody's a Ben Ish Chai. Ela Ben Ish Chai, his father was a tzaddik, Shafilu B'misaso Karui Chai. Even when his father was dead, he was still alive. Now the Gemara explains, Rav Pa'alim, So the point for our Gemara, by the way, so far, is to explain Ki HaChayim Yodim She'amusu is a reference to the tzaddikim, who even b'misasam are called Chayim. Now, he'll get to the second half in a few lines. But in the meantime, now that he's quoted the pasuk of Benaria Ben Yoyada, he has to explain what exactly did he do. Rav Pa'alim Mikab Tse'el. What does that mean? Of many actions from Kav Tse'el, Sheriba v'kibetz po'alim la'Torah. He increased and gathered the number of those who worked for Torah. V'hu hika eshnei Ariel Moav. What are the two Ariels in Moav? The Ariel, elsewhere in Tanakh, is a reference to the Beis HaMikdash. Hoy Ariel, Ariel Kiryas Chana David. So he, what does it mean? He smote the two lions of Moab, and the first Beis HaMikdash was built by Shlomo, who descended from Rus HaMoaviyah. Shelo hiniach kimoso lo b'mikdash rishon v'lo b'mikdasheni. There was no one who was his peer in either first or second temple periods. He outshone anybody who lived during the two Ariel Moavs. V'hu yarad b'kos ari b'soch habor b'yom ha'shalek. What did he do in the pit on the snow day? Ika da amre, the tavar gezize de barda, v'nachas de taval. There are those who say that he crushed pieces of ice on a day of hail, that he had water in a mikvah so that he could go and be tovel. That does take, if you've ever tried to take a cold shower, going into an ice bath is quite an experience. But for the mitzvah tefillah, he was a lion. Or Ika Da'amre, which I love, Bitana Sifra de Beirav, Biyoma de Situva. No, it doesn't refer to a physical action of tefillah at all. It was on a day, an overcast day, the kind of day when snow or hail would come down. He conquered the Sifra de Beirav. I think Rashi, Tosa says that the Torah's Kohen and Vayikra is the most difficult to sfarim, and he conquered. He learned it on a day of Shelek. Okay. That was the Gvura of Benayo Ben Yoyada. But the bottom line is, Ki Hayim Yodim She'amusu refers to the tzaddikim who are considered alive even after they die. And then the second half, Vahame Sim, Einam Yodim Uma, the second half that the Rabbi Yonasan was relying upon, Einu Rishayim Shebachayim Kruyim Mason. This is a reference to the wicked who, even when they're alive, are effectively called dead people. Shenemar v'atoch halol rasha nisi Yisrael. According to Rashi, this is the prophecy Yechezkel is addressing to Tzidkiah HaMelech, who was going to be killed by Nebuchadnezzar, and he refers to him as halol, as a corpse, even though he's still alive. Or v'ivayis ema mehacha, Alpi Shnayim Edim O Shlosha Edim Yumas Hames. The Torah says that the dead person shall be put to death on the basis of the testimony of two or three people. What do you mean? You can't kill the dead person. He's dead already. So the point is, what do you mean Yumas Hames? Sechayu, he's alive. Ela Hames Meikara. He's considered dead even when he's alive. Just that parenthetically, from a pshat perspective, this is not typical. This is not a typical biblical Hebrew, although Chazal do darshan this as well. V'losasim damim b'veisecha ki yipol hanofel mimenu. The faller will fall from it. So Chazal say that he was utterly pulled, that it had been declared upon him from heaven that that would be his fate. But the bottom line is, Rav Chiya says to Rav Yonasan, this pasuk doesn't actually mean people after they're dead. It means tzaddikim, who are considered alive even when they're dead, and rishayim, who know nothing, einam yoda me'uma, even though they're actually alive. Therefore, this pasuk doesn't tell us anything about whether or not the dead understand what's going on in this world. Okay, so I'm going to stop here. The Gemara is now going to continue with a couple of more, with a very, very famous, I think it's a famous story. It's a really fun story, actually. Trying to prove the point, and the Gemara basically is going to spend the next of the rest of this Amud with a number of stories to try to demonstrate what the dead actually know. All right, any questions?
Just a quick point, Rabbi. I gave a quick glance on the Eloed Larash that you questioned that may be incorrect. The Maharsha has a quick explanation. Maybe you can explain it to us next week if you look at the Mishnah Daf Yetches.
I'll take a look at the Mishnah.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Thank you. Great cheer.
Yes.
As usual.